Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing wonderful, dreaming of all my delicious turnip products that I'm totally going to make.
Turnips? Are you on Team Shelbyville?
Well, of course.
Matt, come on. We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/thesimpsonsshow for only $2 a month. Gain access to all of our bonus content. A new bonus episode went up today, at least the time of this recording. We are recording very early in the week, but we did a bonus episode on the Simpsons Take the Hollywood Bowl, the event that happened a couple years ago, live show, Simpsons singing and dancing. We put up another King of the Hill review today as well, just all that stuff. Really encourage you guys to check it out. We really appreciate all the people out there who support us. We have a person to thank. Speaking of people who support us, Matthew.
Woo! I love people who support us.
Thank you, John Lozano.
John, you rock.
This week's episode, Lemon of Troy, episode 2F22, originally aired May 14th, 1995, written by Brent Forrester, directed by Jim Reardon, finished 55th in the ratings, Nielsen rating of 8.1, sixth highest rated show on Fox that week. Sixth, Matt.
Yeah, I know. I've pretty much given up hope at this point.
Well, I mean, it's May as well. You know, I don't think people are, you know.
No, that's true. Apparently people stop watching TV in the summertime. Well, they go outdoors.
Yeah, you know, it's nice outside. You can do things.
No, it's not.
Okay, not in Florida. The chalkboard gang, the First Amendment does not cover burping.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court has upheld that. I think it does cover. I mean, it's freedom of expression, so burping is expression, right?
Exactly. And it's not causing any type of risk to anyone else. So, yeah, sorry. You're wrong, guys.
No burping in a crowded theater? Is that a no?
That's totally a thing.
Okay, yep. Good. Couch Gag is a repeat. The Simpsons resemble the Betty Boop cartoons. We have seen this already this season. It's fine. You know,
it's okay. It's what happens.
Well, I mean, it is. They do this all the time now, so it's easy to become kind of numb to it. But you know, it's The Simpsons in a different cartoon style is always neat. Episode begins with Bart just being a carefree young boy out in the town, skating on his skateboard. He spies Wet Cement. The best sign there is, except for maybe High Voltage.
Yes. That is correct.
Yes, he skips. He rushes to it. Skips past a treasure. A safe full of treasure that falls with cement. A flying motorcycle that is piloted by Professor Frink. He gets to the Wet Cement and does he? He has his little vision before or after he writes his name. I think it's before. Correct.
I believe it is after.
Before he has a vision, no. And then he does it, and then Marge sees him doing it.
Okay, I think you're right, actually. Yes.
So he has a vision of the future people, very Jetson style people, seeing his name in the cement, being very impressed by him, and then bringing him back to life.
Using technology, of course.
I mean, theoretically, he could leave scant strains of DNA in the cement with his finger.
That's true. I don't think they would
survive. Probably not. But technology, man, it's beyond our grasp. We just can't comprehend it yet.
Pretty sure I've staked my entire career on that not being true. But hey, let's go with it.
Your entire career as what?
Indeed. As an engineer.
Okay, that career. I wasn't sure which career. Yeah. I didn't know if you were talking about
as a podcaster.
Your podcaster career. Like, I mean, it has made you tons of money. I know. But Marge catches him. And Bart thinks it's just an innocuous shadow behind him, but it is, in fact, his mother. And Marge is very, very upset and explains about town pride to the family at dinner.
I can't believe you vandalized your own hometown, Bart. What would Jebediah Springfield say?
I think he'd be cool with it.
Oh, Homer, will you please help me make a big deal of this?
What for? Nobody cared when Bogart defaced that sidewalk in Hollywood.
Well, I'm just shocked by this whole family. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned town pride?
It's been going downhill ever since the lake caught fire.
Now, just a darn minute. This town is a part of who you are. This is a Springfield Isotopes cap. When you wear it, you're wearing Springfield. When you eat a fish from our river, you're eating Springfield. When you make lemonade from our trees, you're drinking Springfield.
Mom, when you give that lecture, you're boring Springfield.
Bart, you have roots in this town and you ought to show respect for it. This town is a part of us all. A part of us all. A part of us all. Sorry to repeat myself, but it'll help you remember. This town is a part of us all. A part of us all. A part of us all.
Wow, that does work.
So we get a little bit of town pride from Marge.
She would have town pride. That crazy lady.
I don't know. I mean, Marge, I don't know. I feel like it is a way to teach Bart this lesson. You know, do not deface cement, but I'm not sure if I feel like town pride would be more of a Homer thing, honestly. But we do see that later. We do that town pride later from Homer. But we get a little tour of Springfield. And this episode in particular is very just like gets you a perfect idea of the type of town Springfield is, which honestly you don't really see a lot of. Like you only can glean it kind of from the atmosphere surrounding the events of The Simpsons. In this episode in particular, there's a couple of them, but this one is definitely like, hey, here's what Springfield is like. And we get a little tour. Bart is watching Nelson catch fish with army men as bait.
Well, of course, the trout love army men, apparently. Nothing beats the German light infantry.
Of course, and he chucks them at cars. He does not eat the trout. He just...
Well, no.
They're merely to throw at cars. I would not like to be hit by a fish while I was driving. That'd be very bad.
Very gross, because it would probably disintegrate knowing fish.
Yeah, depending on the speed of the car. We see Milhouse having a lemonade stand. Lisa's the only one who's bought any, and it was only out of pity. I think Lisa, that's probably a bad decision on her part. She should not encourage it, honestly. they run out of lemonade, or their lemons, right? They just run out of lemons because they have plenty of lemonade. So they have to go make a trip to the lemon tree, which we have never heard of before. But
wait, are you sure, Robbie? I'm pretty sure I knew all about the lemon tree before this. I mean, it was a Springfield staple, don't you know?
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. Of all those references. But they it's very idyllic little journey we go on through the woods of Springfield, like through trees and bushes and over a little brook. Milhouse hurting himself every single step of the way. It's Milhouse hurting himself, so it's funny. They get to the lemon tree, and it is also like a very like I'm trying to think of like a comparison I can think of. I know it's reference to something that I cannot place, but it's like children are flitting about the tree. There's like really like romantic music playing, where we see the lemon tree, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful tree.
It's true. It's very bucolic splendor kind of thing. That there's even a glow around it where the kids go, oh, and ah.
Yeah, you get the idea of how treasured this thing is. But then we meet the kids from Shelbyville.
You know, Milhouse, I've been thinking, this town ain't so bad. Good friends, lots of lemons, numerous angel sightings. When you get right down to it, Springfield's a pretty cool place to live.
Springfield sucks!
Hey, stop talking bad about my town, man.
Why don't you make me?
I don't make trash, I burn it.
Then I guess you're a garbage man.
Well, I know you are, but what am I?
A garbage man.
Oh, I know you are, but what am I?
A garbage man.
I know you are, but what am I?
A garbage man.
Takes one to know one.
Checkmate!
Hey, kid, stop wearing your backpack over one shoulder. We invented that. Copycat.
You copied us.
Step over this line and say that. I'll kick your butt. At Nintendo.
I just put a rock in your crummy town.
That's a crud rock. It belongs in crud town.
Look at the weak little baby. You're stupid, you stupid weak baby. Come on, let's get out of here.
Hey, they're taking our lemons.
We can't spare a single one.
You just got citric acid in my eye. You'll pay for that, Springfield.
There are so many wonderful things about
that. I know, like, I wanted to, I'm trying to, like, I try and limit clips to under a minute in general, but all these things, like, I can't just cut them. Like, they're too good. And one, that the kid who is from Shelbyville, the lead kid in Shelbyville, is just Bart. again.
But, you know, taller and stronger, apparently, since Bart is a stupid weak baby.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, he dresses exactly like Bart. He just, like, it's like an off-model Bart Simpson, basically, and as well as the off-model Milhouse, who is...
I think the off-model Milhouse is pretty much the best one. I think we can agree on that.
It's really good. And we see more and more of this as we go, how Shelbyville really is not that different from Springfield.
It's pretty identical, except for a few small changes.
Yeah, we actually learn about the histories of these towns from Grandpa. He tells the kids a story.
Some things never change.
Hey, everybody, an old man's talking.
Grandpa's the name. Did you know this tree dates back to frontier times?
Wow.
Shut up! It all began when Jebediah Springfield first came to these lands with his partner, Shelbyville Manhattan.
People, our search is over. On this site, we shall build a new town where we can worship freely, govern justly, and grow vast fields of hemp for making rope and blankets.
Yes, and marry our cousins.
What are you talking about, Shelbyville? Why would we want to marry our cousins?
Because they're so attractive. I thought that was the whole point of this journey.
Absolutely not.
I tell you, I won't live in a town that robs men of the right to marry their cousins.
Well, then we'll form our own town. Who will come and live a life devoted to chastity, abstinence, and a flavorless mush I call root marm?
And the two go their separate ways, and they start the two separate towns.
I find this a very spurious split, considering there are several states in the U.S. that still allow you to marry your cousin, and apparently it's pretty common in the rest of the world.
Here you go, Matt. All right, I'm gonna break it down for you. One, I do want to mention, I love the little tiny subtle little gag that his name is Shelbyville Manhattan. They went with the name Shelbyville as the name of their town. Two, this is pulled from history. This is an actual thing that Plymouth. You know Plymouth, correct? Plymouth, Massachusetts, one of our first colonies in America. United States, I should say. I know some people object to America referring to the United States. It is one of our, you know, back in colonial days, in the 17th century, Plymouth was formed by the Puritans, right? You know, very, very, you know, religious folk who were very strict about following the Bible. Mm-hmm. There was a nearby town called Marymount, where I looked this up. Marrying incestuous relationships and public drunkenness were condoned.
Interesting.
Marymount was after a few years, the Puritans vastly outgrew them. Basically, they had so many more settlers than Marymount did. Marymount just kind of collapsed simply because of that fact. They just could not survive because there weren't enough people there. Plymouth outgrew them and kind of pressured them away because they didn't like their drunken cousin marrying neighbors. And now it is just, they're both like, they're very close to each other. But Marymount's like, they're a neighborhood now. But it is a real thing.
Wow.
Long, long ago. So, it's ridiculous, but it's true. I don't know. And again, this is such a, like, more history about Springfield, and it gives it just this, how long was that, a minute? And it gives us so much flavor and background and depth about the Simpsons in general. Like, we just get a little bit more information about Springfield. It makes it feel like a real place.
It does. It even kind of feels like Springfield is becoming even more of a background character itself, which happens in a lot of fiction. The setting essentially becomes a character and influences in a large way. And I think this is the episode where that really happens to the town of Springfield and also Shelbyville.
Yeah. And we get more and more of that in the next few seasons, honestly. Like, we have not yet learned about Hans Sprungfeld, but I don't think that episode works without this episode.
No, definitely not.
But we cut to class. The kids are learning about Roman numerals, or rather not learning about Roman numerals. They're basically ignoring Mrs. Krabappel. And then Nelson breaks into the classroom, says he has big news, but no time to talk. And he just, and everyone follows him, and the entire class deserts Miss Krabappel, who does try for a moment to tell them that what they're learning is important, but then just gives up.
That's true, but her heart's really not in it. You can tell.
I mean, if I was a teacher in Springfield Elementary, I'm not sure how dedicated I would be as well. but the kids follow Nelson. He does find, despite saying there is no time to talk, does find time to get a drink of water on the way. But they come back to find that the lemon tree has been stolen.
The lemon tree's gone! And the tracks appear to lead into Shelbyville!
Oh, look, a clue. A candy bar wrapper.
Oh, they're always eating candy in Shelbyville. They love the sweet taste. We gotta get that tree back.
Ah, you mean going to Shelbyville? We'll never make it out alive.
That lemon tree is a part of our town, and his kids, the backbone of our economy. We'll get it back or choke their rivers with our dead. Where are you going, Bart? Mom, you won't believe this, but something you said the other day really got through to me. And now, I am going to teach some kids a lesson.
I choose to take that literally.
Death to Shelbyville!
Yes, Bart's a tutor now. Toot on, son! Toot on!
Just so... Gosh.
Toot on, man.
Toot on. Toot on, exactly. Marge taking that literally...
Yeah,
Homer.
Yeah.
It's this episode uses all the family members really well. I think Lisa's the only one who gets kind of short shrift. But Marge gets some, Homer gets a lot, Bart in particular. But I feel like even at this point, this is more of just like Springfield episode. We get many different characters that are
that's
all
true.
Shared.
It's not really an in depth kind of thing. It's more of a little bit of everybody kind of
ensemble piece. But with that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, we see that the Barton is going to get Milhouse to get him ready. And Milhouse, of course, is he's a wuss. So his great idea of adventure is camouflage, which works a little better in Milhouse's dreams than it does in real life. Because in Milhouse's dream, he pretty much disappears into the trees, which, for those of you who do not know, that is not how camouflage works.
Matt, I've played Metal Gear Solid, and that is how that works. You just, like, lay down and you have it on and you disappear.
Sure. You keep believing that, but don't try and
stealth.
Avoid being shot with that.
That's stealth. If I've gotten into my... I generally try and avoid situations where there's a chance of me being shot.
Hopefully all of us do. But do not rely on camouflage for that. Moving along, we then see that Bart has put together an entire crew, and it turns out they all have roles.
Okay, here's how it goes. I'm the leader. Milhouse is my loyal sidekick. Nelson's a tough guy. Martin's a smart guy. And Todd's a quiet religious guy who ends up going crazy. And now, the time has come to cross this line into mystery and danger. To step out of childhood and become men.
I really like that Milhouse is his loyal sidekick instead of being the wuss kid.
I feel like he's, as long as Bart's around... That's
Milhouse
what
has a special spot.
Yeah. Bart, I mean, like, they've explored their friendship before. I feel like Bart pulls him out of that role and puts him into the loyal sidekick role.
That's probably true. That's why he hangs around Bart, because as long as Bart's around, he's not the wuss kid. He is the sidekick, which is definitely a step up from wuss kid.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
The kids move on through Shelbyville, where they learn all... We get to see a whole bunch of Shelbyville... businesses and institutions that are essentially the same as in Springfield with just minor tweaks. I cannot remember for the life of me what the Quickie Mart was. What was it? Do you remember?
I think Speedy Mart or something along
Speedy
those
Mart,
lines.
That's what it was.
And Moses Joe's.
Yeah, basically everything is exactly the same, just twisted a little bit.
There's a female groundskeeper, Willie.
That's true. That's a little later, but yeah, the female groundskeeper, Willie, all just... crazy fun stuff. The fire hydrants are yellow instead of red.
Yeah,
which
and
is...
I think this episode is largely saying that, you know, again, Springfield is a small town. It is a relatively small place in America, and everything, like, to the Simpsons, everything in Springfield is normal. Like, there's nothing strange about, and they actually get into this a little bit in 22 Short Stories About Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Where they talk about McDonald's. because there's no McDonald's in Springfield. There's only Krusty Burger. Like, and like, Shelbyville is fundamentally the same as Springfield.
It really is. I think what they're going for is when you grow up one way and you don't really know anything else, even the slightest differences can blow your mind. I'm sure as soon as somebody from Springfield goes to, say, New York, their brains are just going to have a complete and utter meltdown. And they'll realize, wow, Shelbyville is exactly like Springfield's.
Yeah, they're all small towns are kind of like this, where like every small town has that one store, but then, and as a kid, you're just like, hey, that's the store. But then you go to another, like when I was a kid, like grew up in rural Florida. First time I saw a 7-Eleven, I was like, what is this place? What they have donuts here? They sell donuts and they're fresh. Like what? How?
At the gas station? Can't be possible.
What kind of crazy? This is like some fancy gas station.
And then you saw Wawa and you were like, my
God. Yeah, I know. Wawa kind of. I mean, I'm trying to. I can't think of a Wawa to those who do not live in Florida or
the Northeast.
Nor the Northeast of the U.S. is a rather nice convenience store / gas station.
It's true. Like when you saw there were more than like four restaurants growing up.
Yeah, you have to kind of adjust your, and we've seen this before a little bit when they go to Capital City and things like that, but Capital City is different because it is a big city. But Shelbyville is just another small town, and it's suddenly like it's like the Twilight Zone. It's like an alternate dimension.
While they are exploring, Marge finds out from Lisa what exactly Bart is up to. And of course, Marge being Marge, she freaks out and claims that Bart has joined a violence gang and runs to tell Homer. Meanwhile, back in Shelbyville, the kids have decided to split up to try and find the tree.
The trail has become indistinct. I suggest we split up to cover more ground.
Good idea. Milhouse, you and me will be Omega Team. Todd, you and Data are Team Strike Force. Nelson, that leaves you and Martin.
Team Discovery Channel! Your wussiness better come in handy.
This is obviously back when Discovery Channel was still a good thing to be named for nerds.
I was gonna say the same exact thing. This is before Discovery Channel was exclusively reality shows. It's when they actually showed some educational programming.
Yeah, back when the History Channel showed some kind of history and Discovery showed some kind of science, and now it's just Pawn Stars and aliens.
Ancient aliens. Come on, Matt.
Aliens. Sorry, Hitler aliens is what I should go with.
Aliens.
moving along. We then jump back to the parents, which is something this episode does really well, I think. It's one cohesive story, but you get to see it from several different viewpoints, which I think really helps shore it up. Because we move back to the parents, and of course, they're all concerned. We get to see all the kids' parents, the Flanderses and the Simpsons, and Martin's parents and Milhouse's parents. And we actually find out that Milhouse's mom, Luann, is from Shelbyville. I think this is the first time they mentioned that.
It is.
And of course, that burns up Kurt inside.
They have not gotten divorced.
That is something to be ashamed of.
They haven't gotten a divorce yet.
No, next season after. It's coming up, though. So yeah. Don't worry. Of course, once they find out the kids are in Shelbyville, Homer decides that they could, that Flanders's help is not as useful by calling the sheriff and having them fax him when they show up in the morgue. So he's going to steal, borrow Flanders's RV.
Hey, Flanders is right there.
That's true.
Flanders' kid is also
missing.
To it. Does he say the word no?
He does not, come on, Ned. No means no, and that will protect you.
I know, you just, come on. Ned, we're going to see Hurricane Nettie, but Flanders just needs to learn how to say the word, you know, be firm about it, his nose. But
indeed,
that does not happen in this case. His RV is a very nice RV.
It is destroyed, essentially.
No, it's fine.
Uh-huh. Homer explicitly tells people, do not wipe your feet.
It's destroyed. You can...
Sorry.
You can get it. You can get it cleaned. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a small price to pay for the return of his son.
Is it though? I mean, it's Rod. Come on, really.
Point taken.
We go back to Shelbyville and we see the teams essentially going through and trying to find the lemon tree, and it doesn't work out so well for Martin in the beginning.
Okay, Piglet, start squealing. Where'd you get the lemons for this lemonade?
This is Country Time lemonade mix. There's never been anything close to a lemon in it, I swear.
Hey, nobody hassles my little brother.
Hey, and no one manhandles the bosom chum of Nelson Muntz. Spring forth, burly protector, and save me!
Ah, oh, jeez. I never hang out with him, normally.
Hark to the tale of Nelson and the boy he loved so dear. They remain the best of friends for years and years and years.
I just had to include the long silence.
Oh, no, no, it's perfect. It sounds, it's even longer than I remember, but it's just, and like, that whole scene is beautiful, and like, they really get the size difference down between all the kids. Like, you have the little tiny kids selling lemonade, and then and suddenly Martin is bullying him, and there's never been a lemon even anywhere near this lemonade.
It's Country Time, that's true.
Yeah, it's true. It's just, it's sugar water. But then we get his brother, who's larger, and then Nelson, who's even larger. So it's, you know, you get a nice little scale there. Nelson being embarrassed, but because he's a part of his team, I guess Nelson feels compelled to protect him.
It's true. All you have to do is somehow insinuate yourself into a group of friends, and you will get protection. It's just weird how that works when you're a kid.
They're unified. You know, they're all Springfieldians in this foreign territory, and they're in enemy land. They have to protect each other. What else can they do?
I believe you meant Springfieldianite.
Is that the proper?
That is the proper term.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I apologize.
But after this transpires, we see Bart and Milhouse, who are using a pair of binoculars to spy on some Shelbyville kids. And of course, Bart thinks that he can read lips, but of course he can't. So he gets Milhouse to make him a disguise with his Baron something or other.
I cannot remember.
Nah, neither can I. It's not important. Disguise kit. So basically, they dress him up to look like one of the Beatles, and then from their mop top phase in the, I believe it's early 60s.
No, but he had a scar.
Of course, he had a scar, which makes him completely different and utterly a new person when you get a scar.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. It's like Clark Kent. He just disappears.
When you put the glasses on, you disappear into your Clark Kent identity. So you put the scar on, you disappear into... Do we ever get a name for his assumed identity?
No, he is just anonymous Shelbyville kid.
Of course. We then go back to the parents, who are talking to some of the Shelbyvillians, who are essentially the Springfielders, but they talk slower and drink FUD instead of Duff.
Yeah, they're...
So
I don't know if
they have a lot of people going blind.
I'm not even sure if they do talk slower. I feel like these particular Shelbyvillians are... just you may be the slower talking type, but I feel like they're equal in Springfield is no different. The beer is different,
and it gives them brain damage because it's FUD and causes people to go blind. Apparently,
that's come on, that was an isolated case.
Of course, how foolish of me. We then go back to Bart, who has gone up to the bluffs to paint Springfield sucks. Oh, actually, I forgot the best part. While Bart is trying to insinuate himself with these Shelbyville kids, the Milhouse analog says radical. Of course, Milhouse screams into the radio, which Bart has in his pocket, that he should stop copying him. and Bart replies he basically tries to cover it up, and the Bart analog says that he wishes there was a Springfield kid right now so he could fill his mouth with stink bugs, and Bart replies, "No, not in my mouth," is what he would say to the Bluffs. Best cover-up so far in this show. So Bart has to paint Springfield sucks, so Bart gets the spray paint cans, and apparently the Shelbyvillians are very impressed with his can control and his penmanship with the spray paint cans. But when he steps back to reveal what he has painted, it says, what was it, Springfield rules?
Suckers.
Something like that. Suckers. That's right. Suckers. I always forget the suckers. He then attempts to get away with...
No, that's not... That's after the commercial, man.
Really?
Yeah, they cut to...
Oh, that's
it's
right.
It's a little cliffhanger there, literally, because they're on a cliff.
That's true, and they say, get him, and then we get to a commercial.
I do want to point out that my favorite bit about that is, while he's spray-painting stuff, they are talking about him. They mention that he is good with the spray-paint cans. They also note that his wig is nice.
Yeah.
So they know he's wearing a wig. They just don't see past that. They don't get it. But yes, Bart does try to escape by using spray paint canes like jetpacks. Unfortunately, that does not work in real life. Or I don't think maybe in particular cartoon that this has happened, but a spray paint can does not provide enough force to lift someone off the ground.
No,
not even two. I wonder how many it would take. Matt, come on, do the math right now.
Sorry, I'm trying to think. I don't think it would be physically possible. We should write into the XKCD guy, Randall Monroe, and ask what if, how many spray paint cans would it take? Because their ejectile force is minuscule. I think each can you add would actually reduce the force because of the weight of the can.
Okay, take away the weight of the can.
In that case, I would probably put it in the hundreds, maybe a few, the low thousands. So,
all right, there you guys. Luck. Physics go minute. There, that was our physics minute. they engage in a skateboard chase down the mountain. Bart steals one of the kids' skateboards, and him and the Bart analog are in a long chase sequence. This is really good. They go through a construction site, and they're up and down through pipes, over boards, like all kinds of stuff. This is where we see a lot of the stuff in Shelbyville. We see the Speedy Mart. We see Joe's. We see the female groundskeeper Willie at Shelbyville Elementary, which looks identical to Springfield Elementary. Bart just can't get away, and finally, he is trapped in more of that wet cement, that pesky wet cement. His skateboard gets stuck there, so he must book it on foot.
Frink also denies him a ride yet again.
Well, I mean,
you had your chance.
He had his chance. He could have taken it up earlier. He didn't. But Bart finds himself near, I guess, the Shelbyville Zoo, and ducks into there. But the Shelbyville kids are not that far behind him. And he finally he sees a big, strong, I guess, iron door. It would be iron or steel.
Iron or steel, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And goes through it, but finds himself trapped inside the tiger enclosure. It's tigers, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Exit through door 7 only. All other rooms contain man-eating tigers. Roman numerals. They never even tried to teach us that in school. Milhouse, what's 7 in Roman numerals?
I'll tell you, Bart. But you really should end each transmission with the word over. Over.
Correction. The only thing that's over is that transmission.
Is this the untimely end of Milhouse?
But Milhouse is my name.
But I thought I was the only one.
A pain I know all too well.
So this is what it feels like when doves cry.
Milhouse, Milhouse, now what do I do? Wait, I got it. I don't got it. Okay, think, Bart. Where have you seen Roman numerals before? I know, Rocky V. That was the 5th one. So Rocky 5 plus Rocky 2... equals Rocky 7, Adrian's Revenge!
We've not...
Adrian's Revenge, that's totally it.
I mean, there have been 7 Rocky movies at this point, but I guess, I don't know, let's see, there's Rocky 5, and then Rocky 6 was Rocky Balboa, right?
Right.
And then 7 is not theoretically Rocky, it was Creed.
Apollo Creed, yes.
Yeah, but it's not... I mean, Rocky's in it.
Rocky is in it, he is the trainer, I guess...
It's a spinoff.
It's a shared universe kind of thing. Yeah, so we're waiting for Rocky's kid to come in and fight Creed's son. So, you know.
Oh, no. They're going to do that, aren't they?
I don't.
They shouldn't do that. There should be no more of those. I think Creed is a good end point. You made a good one. Stop. He escapes from the zoo. The kids obviously are. I also want to note those Roman numerals, I believe, are just in order. I don't think it's like
indeed they are.
1, 3, 6, 8, whatever. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He could just count.
So Bart failed kindergarten. What of it, Robbie?
I mean, the teacher was really mean to him. But he escapes. He and the rest of... he joins up with the rest of the kids, right? After he sees the lemon right behind that lemon-shaped rock. And they see that the lemon tree is trapped inside the car impound lot of Shelbyville.
The impenetrable fortress of suburbia.
That is basically true. And they are overlooking it, and it is a scene reminiscent of Mad Max 2. That is Mad Max, I think. There's Road Warrior, then Mad Max, then Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So, Mad Max. And just as the kids are thinking of a way to try and get the tree out, they are discovered by their parents. Homer is very angry at the children until he learns that the lemon tree was stolen, and then they have to get that back. So Homer has the same, like, he has that Springfield pride in him, especially, I guess, when there's like an openly antagonistic force against him. I think that definitely brings it out in Homer.
Oh, absolutely. Competitiveness is what drives Homer, that and beer.
I mean, yes. I don't know what drives. Fuels?
Yeah, that's true. Fuels.
He's like a gas-a-hole car.
One for you, one for me. One for you, one for me.
Exactly. They go to the Carnival lot, and we meet the Homer doppelganger, who is Hank Azaria doing a Walter Matthau impression.
He almost sounds like the Homer from the Tracy Ullman show.
Which is exactly what he's trying to go for. Yes. And obviously, again, another very like, hey, it's not that different. You know, the guy, he owns the car impound lot, does he not?
I believe so, yes. So he's pretty successful.
Yeah, and he has a house directly across from the car impound lot. Homer gets very angry and yells at him and then tries to climb the gate and fails. Badly. And as they are driving away, Bart comes up with a plan.
This is the darkest day in the history of Springfield. If anybody wants me, I'll be in the shower.
There's got to be a way to get that tree back. Hey, look! A hospital! Pull in there!
Oh, great! Now I'm upside down!
Don't take showers in moving vehicles.
Or vehicles in general, unless you really have to.
Those big RVs have nice showers in them. I mean, you can get water hookups.
Possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's how people camp.
I don't know if it counts as camping if you're in an RV.
Isn't it called, like, glamping or something like that?
Something like that. It's like...
If I could afford it, I would do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's really no reason to ever go live in the outdoors unless you just want to get back to nature for a weekend.
It's camping in Florida is not always. There's lots of mosquitoes.
No.
But they pull a, like, as the name implies, a Helen of Troy, Trojan horse situation, and they are pulled into, they parked in the hospital zone, towed into the car impound lot. And they come out at night to take the tree back.
No one in history has ever done anything this clever.
I'll get the gate.
That's okay, son. I'll take care of him. Faster, son! He's got a taste for meat now!
I had to include the dog, that thing that stand that always is one thing I always remember from this episode is that dog embedding his face through the door and then still like chewing with that metal noise. It's just the way Homer and Bart look at like the impression on the door is just spectacular.
Like they're like a little terrified that he's still gonna get through.
Yes. The alarm also awakens Shelbyville Homer and Shelbyville Bart, and they rush to close the gate and trap Homer and Bart and the rest of the crew inside the car impound lot. They race it out. They are momentarily stuck because Homer is roasting like six chickens.
Six, yes, sounds about right.
It's a lot of chickens. There's many chickens. There's multiple rows of multiple chickens. He wisely remembers, oh, wait, right, we need to actually move this thing. It turns it off. They go, they gun it. It does some minor cosmetic damage to the outside.
Cosmetic damage. Rips the side open. Yeah.
It doesn't penetrate. It does not penetrate into the cabin, does it?
It does not, but it does tear away the exterior surface.
And the bumper. But they have the tree. They escape for a while. Then they hit the sign that is welcoming them back to Springfield. And we get a kind of an epilogue from Grandpa. And Shelbyville Grandpa, for that matter.
And with that, a mighty cheer went up from the heroes of Springfield. They had brought the sacred tree back to its native soil. And old Flanders was stuck with the impound fee, He could easily afford it.
More lemonade, Bart? Absolutely. Say when.
There are over 14 parts of the lemon that are...
And with that, a mighty cheer went up from the heroes of Shelbyville. They had banished the awful lemon tree forever because it was haunted. Now let's all celebrate with a cool glass of turnip juice.
And that little touch there at the end, that is the end, I should note. But that little touch, like, every town has its own version of this, of their, like, this rivalry. Like, you talk to Shelbyville grandpa, his version of their history and stuff is completely different. And it adds just a lot of flavor and feels, makes it feel like this is a whole universe we're visiting. You know, it is not just a little, we're not just seeing the Simpsons house. Like, everything, it makes you feel, it makes you feel like you're there.
It really does. It makes you feel like there really are two different universes from two different points of view. And the thing about history is, unless there is a third party nearby that doesn't have a stake in it, either one could end up in the history books.
There's no such thing as an unbiased observer.
Indeed.
Presence of an observer already has altered what they are seeing. But it's an excellent episode.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I would weigh against it is that it doesn't really have a bunch of, like, character. You know, it doesn't have, like, deep emotional stuff, but...
Not super deep, but we do learn quite a bit about Bart. Like, this is a very Bart-centric episode, and I think one of the better Bart episodes, honestly. You learn about really what makes him tick.
That's true. I agree with that. I'll say this. It is not, there's not a lot of emotional depth. Like, it's not like, hey, someone learning a lesson or two characters, like, forming some sort of bond or learning about more about their relationship. But there is a lot of details about the characters.
That's true. And you know me, I love the episodes where you learn more about the background characters, because especially in Springfield, everybody has their own attitude and story. And I really like this episode because of that.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. The gags and the writing and the pace is just all really, really, really well done. And we will rank it at the end of the show. It might go pretty high.
No.
Let's see, Matt. It is time for my favorite episode. And I had hinted at this last week, but I did not actually realize the extent of this. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 submissions for this episode.
Dang, you guys really like this episode.
Yeah, this is art that surpasses Lisa on Ice for most submissions. And here we go. From Spike, you're rapidly coming up on my favorite episode, Lemon of Troy. It was a close run thing between that and the PTA disbands from a couple weeks ago. I love the sense of boyish adventure, which appealed to my young teenage self when it first aired. I like the introduction of Shelbyville as an almost alternate universe Springfield. It's a very Bart-centric episode, but we get to see more of the other kids than we usually do. To round off, there are some great throwaway liners from Homer Stupider Like a Fox to Marge's Bart quit his tutoring job and joined a violence gang to Milhouse's Wonderful. So this is what it feels like when doves cry. My absolute high, though, is Nelson and Martin working together as Team Discovery Channel, with Martin's absolute glee at having Nelson as his, albeit temporary, friend. Spring forth, burly protector, and save me! Nelson's reluctantly coming to his rescue, and hark to the tale of Nelson. It's so unlike how the boys would act around each other in Springfield, yet it still seems completely in character for both of them. I wonder if Martin got beat up when they got home, or whether Nelson was secretly proud of himself. Really enjoy the show, guys. Makes Monday more bearable. Thank you. From Christian. Hey guys, love the show. Just wanted to get the My Favorite Episode submission in. Lemon of Troy, episode 2F22, sits easily as my favorite episode. Before I begin, I must tell you a great tip for the journey of my rant. Put a pinch of sage in your boots and all day long, a spicy scent is your reward. The jokes dominate the episode. There is a slight more overtone, but it takes side stage. Most of the greatest center around Martin, one of my faves, which may be why I appreciate the episode. The name of the episode, of course, centers around the end when they use Flanders' RV. The small town hometown rivalry creates a storyline at the heart of America. I'm worried this is getting a little long. So I say, if you disagree, remember, nobody manhandles the bosom child of Nelson Muntz. Hark the tale of Nelson and the boy he loves so dear, they remain the best of friends for years and years and years. Team Discovery Channel. Thanks. And I don't, like, you could say it's long. There's always going to be, it's fine. You guys are really, everybody, your submissions are always wonderful. From Adam, my favorite episode of The Simpsons has to be Lemon of Troy. This episode actually reminds me a lot of my favorite movies, The Warriors, which is a retelling of a Greek tale, Xenophon's Anabasis. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Also, The Warriors is awesome. That was me. As Bart learns about civic pride, we are treated to a Simpsons take on a different Greek tale. There's a great sense of adventure and exploration of the unknown as Bart, Milhouse, Nelson, Martin, Todd, and Database venture into the forbidden territory of Shelbyville. I loved exploring the town of Shelbyville, which we've not seen before, as well as its inhabitants. Many members from Springfield have an equivalent rival from Ground Screw Willie, Moe, and Abe, which leads me to question whom Luann's Springfield rival could be. This episode really lets some side characters shine. Milhouse and Nelson get some great screen time, and it's fantastic when Nelson and Martin teamed up as an unlikely pair. They play off each other so well, Nelson being embarrassed of his partner and Martin being so unashamedly nerdy and wussy. Episode is crammed full of so many clever jokes, including my all-time favorite Simpsons line. Maybe that's why we beat him at football nearly half the time.
Nearly
half. It's a perfect example of dumb sports ball things people say. When Bart notices the lemon behind the yellow lemon-shaped rock, it makes me laugh every time. Also a big fan when the Shelbyvillians tell Flanders that the police captain will fax them if the kids' bodies show up in the morgue. Near the end, we are treated to a great visual skateboard chase sequence where we get to see Shelbyville and all its yellow-colored fire hydrant glory. Still creeps me out, but I will still be watching this episode while I anxiously await the release of Rocky 7. Yes, I think Rocky 7, Adrian's Revenge. Some formatting issues there. Short one from Isaac. Nonstop gags in this, and it really just a fun episode. Shake harder, boy! Gets me every time. This is from Nancy, Salt Lake City. Hello, Matt and Robbie. I was torn between Lemon of Troy and Brother from the Same Planet as my favorite episode. Lemon of Troy just edges it out as my favorite of the two because one quote, shake harder, boy. See, not alone. That quote alone is part of my everyday vocabulary. For me, this episode illustrates why I love The Simpsons so much. Like visible jokes, like Homer grilling while they're trying to get away, from Bart not paying attention in school, and from Bobble teaching them Roman numerals, only to be in a situation where he needs to exit through door 7, saying Roman numerals, they never even try and teach us that in school. Having these Rocky movies get the right door in a weird way helps me learn the numerals at a young age before I learned it in school. My favorite scene, and my husband's as well, is when we first see the dad of the main kid who looks like Homer with more hair biting into a lemon. Makes me laugh so much because every time I eat anything with lemon, I always try to make that face in reference to that scene. And all this episode is great and represents Shelbyville versus Springfield distaste for each other in a fun and cute way. Brings everyone together like Martin and Nelson. Bart's pride and Homer rallying all the dads to get back the kids. There's too many quotes, jokes, and gags to name that. I feel like I'm going to explode here. Show my love for this episode is just great overall. Thank you guys. I love the podcast. It's radical. It helps me get through my work week. I would make a Milhouse joke about not saying radical.
Yeah.
It's from Nick G. Hey there, Robbie and Matt. I'm ready to let you know about my favorite episode, Lemon of Troy. First off, this has a special place in my heart because it's the first Simpsons episode I remember watching back in 2001 when I was 5. Oh, man. You guys are young. And I was dying of laughter the whole time. Secondly, this is a great episode that focuses mainly around the kids being kids, which is always nice to see them act their own age. The episode also has my favorite Simpsons part ever, Hark to the Tale of Nelson and the boy he loves so dear. They remain the best of friends for years and years and years. Part is fantastic in so many ways, it kills me every time. This is my submission for my favorite episode. Thank you for putting on such a great podcast. Can't wait to see what the future holds. Thank you very much. From Dave, greetings from the past. I've only found your podcast within the last 2 or 3 months, and I'm plowing through the backlog from the beginning, having just caught up to Selma's Choice while the latest episode releases Lisa's Wedding. So if you do in fact read this, or even still do this a bit at all, I'm another 3 months before I hear it. Luckily, though, I'm catching you before my favorite episode. Lemon of Troy is my absolute, unquestioned favorite episode of The Simpsons. Doesn't have the heart of some of the other popular choices, but it does have the most memorable lines in the show's history, fun exploration of the rivalry with Shelbyville over the years, and great sporting roles from a ton of side characters. Stupider like a fox, there's a lemon behind that rock. That's why we beat them at football nearly half the time. That's my thing that I say. I'll kick your butt at Nintendo. Something's draining the battery. Look, it's someone's attractive cousin. All make me laugh just thinking about them, and there's so many more than that. Thanks so much for the show. I want to get back for years to revisit, but I just don't have the time with my wife and I both working full-time jobs and having a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. Having an audio means to relive so many some people like children, man. Having an audio means to relieve so many wonderful memories has truly brought me so much joy. Have a great day and keep up the great work. Thank you very much. Woo! Oh, that's all of them.
That's all.
That's all.
That's the most so far. So, guys, if you really like episode, please let us know. We want to beat 7. We need to make Robbie work even harder.
Hey, it's Robbie from the nearer past with a late 8th My Favorite Episode entry. Hey, Matt and Robbie, Ellis from Dublin, Ireland here. First of all, huge fan of the show. Look forward to Monday every week because you're a super awesome podcast. Plus, it's making me rewatch all the old episodes again and relive my youth. I've chosen Lemon of Troy for my favorite episode. The most magical thing about this episode is the way it creates a history of rivalry between the two towns of Springfield and Shelbyville within the first few minutes that feels like it has been running throughout the entire show, even though Shelbyville has only been mentioned in two previous episodes, and bases it entirely around something as silly as a lemon tree. However, it sucks you in, making you believe so strongly about this tree and its history almost immediately, causing the audience to vouch for the Springfield clan even harder. The way it brings the Springfield kids together is fantastic, as they are usually fighting amongst themselves, pairing characters such as Nelson and Martin, having Nelson come to Martin's rescue saying, "Aw, jeez, I never hang out with him normally," before throwing the kid off. Milhouse and Milhouse 2's subplot is so good, with Milhouse getting so angry at being copied, "That's my thing that I say. I feel like I'm going to explode here." And when the parents get involved, it just brings everything together, mirroring the hilarious similarities and group dynamic between the children and their parents. Ellis also includes many examples after this. But that is it. This is a gentle reminder also that just because an episode is released on Sunday does not mean we record on Sunday. Please get your entries in early if you want to assure that they will be in any particular episode. Back to further past Matt and Robbie.
It's, I don't know. We might, who knows? There's obviously season 7 and 8 are very popular. Still, it's where my favorite episode is. So, I've gone on the record, but I'm not going to say. Make people do their homework. We can move on to our next segment, Matt. It's time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group. It is archived on Google Groups. And see what people are talking about the day, the week or two after an episode debuted. I do want to note, I had to pull all this stuff from Simpsons Archive, which is a great resource. If you guys want to see more, like, a concise kind of collection of that stuff, because the actual archive is basically empty for this time period.
Weird.
Which I do, I like going to the actual Google groups and seeing, like, everything, even all the junk, because I like the atmosphere of all that, but Simpsons Archive is, I heartily recommend it if you want to see the clean version, I suppose, but they do a good collection of reviews from the time, and it was pretty positive. Very, and no bad ones, only a couple like, it was okay. Most very happy with it.
Which is really weird because we really enjoyed this episode as well. I think this is the first time we have substantially agreed with the news groups.
I feel like we've done it before. I'm not sure though. I don't think it's, I don't know. They should love this episode. It's a great one. So,
that's true.
I'm not upset at them this week.
For once,
I'm not upset.
For once, their compliments make sense. I would assume you're the one who read it, so maybe they're
complimenting
stupid things.
No, they like just same stuff. They like. I mean, it's hard to not like. It's super clever. It moves quickly. It has a great action and theme and everything. Everything it does is great. So, but they, most of these people are not writing like page long reviews. It's a paragraph generally. But that's about it. You know, there's no actual other stuff to find because there's nothing there. I don't know why just random links of time just vanish. Google's trying to censor us, man.
Yeah. Something they don't like in there.
Yeah. We can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite Mo quote? Which, we all love Mo. And I actually think Mo is my favorite supporting character.
Yeah, he really is.
It's either him or Flanders, but I think Mo, by a hair, gets it. But tons of great answers. Really appreciate all you guys taking the time to respond. First up, we have Graham, Bart. Here, you be Bart and Homer. I'll be Mo. Got it, Matt?
You see it? Sure.
Right, you see where I'm at?
So I'm Bart and Homer, you're Mo?
Correct.
Okay. Mo, look over there.
What? What am I looking at? I'm going to stop looking soon. Oh, is that it?
Hey, Mo, can I look?
Sure, but it'll cost you.
My wallet's in the car.
He's so stupid. And now back to the wall. That's a great quote. From Izzy. My all-time favorite use all the time. I'm better than dirt. Well, most kinds of dirt. Not that fancy store-bought dirt. I can't compete with that stuff.
Oh, God.
That's true. Up car. This ain't no crowbar. This is a crowbar. See, they got the little stools and everything, which you need the visual gag. He has a painting with crows. It's good. Kevin. Yeah. Hi, I'm Mo, or as the ladies like to call me, hey, you behind the bushes. Is this thing on? Next is Josh. I wasn't really going to kill you. I was just going to cut you. Aw, forget it. Next, Ted. They called me Kid Gorgeous. Later on, it was Kid Presentable. Then Kid Gruesome. Finally, Kid Mo.
I love that implies that Mo is worse than Gruesome.
Yes, exactly. Dave's answer. We have Flanders calling, you ugly, hate-filled man. Mo's answer. Mo's response. Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled. What was the other thing you said? Neil's answer. That's it, Homer. I'm taking your character down from Mount Lushmore. I'm pulling your favorite song out of the jukebox. It's Raining Men? Yeah, not no more it ain't.
Ooh.
Good answer. Danny's answer. The lie detector every time. Good, because I got a hot date tonight. Zzz, a date. Zzz, dinner with friends. Zzz, dinner alone. Zzz, watching TV alone. Zzz, all right, I'm going to sit at home over the ladies in the Victoria's Secret catalog. Zzz, Sears catalog. Ding. That's really good. You like my Foley work there, Matt? I tried my best.
That is really impressive. I'm impressed.
We have Zach's answer. All right, here's the 411, folks. Say some gangsta is dissing your fly girl. You just give him one of these. Good. Brian's answer. But Blanche, you gotta help me out here, please. I'm 64 grand in the hole. They're gonna take my thumbs. Only so nice. S's answer. Favorite Mo quote is, I'm a well wisher and that I don't wish you any specific harm. And finally from Johnny. Yes, Homer. All us angels wear Pharaoh slacks. Also, these are all great. All choice. Your answer, Matt.
Honestly, my favorite one is the one that Izzy suggested, but I did come with one that I feel is very, very, very close. Is when Homer is running his garage chiropractic services, and Mo asks him, "Hey, do you think you can fix my sciatica?" And Homer says, "I don't know what that is, so I'm going to say yes." So go limp. One, two, better not sue. Mo says, "Oh, you fixed my back. Now I can work on my crippling emotional pain. Oh, Daddy, why won't you hug me? You hug the mailman."
It gives us a lot about Mo. My answer is the one given by Dave, which is the from Hurricane Nettie, where, you know, Flanders, during his tirade, "You ugly, hate-filled man." And Mo's like, "Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled, but what was the other?" Like that, I just, like, Ned perfectly identifies exactly what Mo is, because that is what Mo is. So, just wonderful. Next week's question: what is your favorite Martin moment? Gotta think about it.
Ooh, yeah,
Martin. I mean, I'm sure some of you will be answering from this very episode, Team Discovery Channel. But there are many good to great Martin moments. So I'm gonna have to think about it.
I'm gonna have to watch some episodes, queue up Martin episodes.
Do you just have that playlist ready?
Nope, but I will totally make one.
Okay. Okay. So I will post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and email us @SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Reach out in any of those places. Like us, follow us, you know, those things. Social media. Join the discussion. Next up, Matt, it is time once again for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. SMRT. I mean, SMART.
The No Google Trivia Challenges, where Matt and I will each challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. This season, we have a wager. The host that does not win has to mow the other's lawn and their wife's Sunday best. Guess what, Matt? Remember back like 2 months ago where we were talking about this? And I'm like, you know what? Even if I do it, I may not be here. I can't, because I won't be in the U.S. Shucks. I'll be in Canada. I'll have moved. I'm still here, so we're going to do it probably soon. I picked out a dress today.
Ooh, fancy.
I took a little, not all of them fit me, so I had to find one that was a little stretchy. It'll fit.
She'll totally do it in your wife's wedding dress. She'll enjoy
that. I'm not going to do it in a wedding dress. I will find a dress that complements my body shape.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I am mathematically eliminated, but does not mean I will stop trying. Matt, are you ready for an easy question?
I'm ready.
All right, these are all from That 90s Show.
Oh, God, I knew it.
We discussed it briefly in our bonus episode for the Patreon, because Weird Al performs at the Simpsons Take the Hollywood Bowl, and he is also in That 90s Show. Your easy question, Matt. What is the name of Homer's successful grunge band in That 90s Show?
Sadgasm?
That is correct.
Yeah. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
You ready? I know it's not going to make much of a difference at this point, but you know, I fear we'll.
It's important.
All right. I have a theme this week. You're going to have to figure it out on your own. Who are Bart and Lisa's favorite cat and mouse team?
That'd be Itchy and Scratchy.
That is correct.
Not Worker and Parasite.
Well, yeah, I'm sure
that's my favorite cat and mouse. Your medium question, Matthew. What is the name of Weird Al's cover of Sadgasm's hit song Shave Me? You would have heard a little bit of it watching The Simpsons Take the Hollywood Bowl.
I remember the song quite well, but as far as the title, I'm just trying to think of it, and it is not coming to me. I give up. No idea.
Brain freeze.
Of course.
It's Weird Al.
For some reason, I did not think that was the title.
Food items. Yeah. Come on. It's weird. Weird Al. He has a thing where he does food.
Yeah, that's why he's amazing. All right. Your medium question. What is the name of the bum that claims he invented itchy and cartoon violence?
Chester J. Lampwick.
You are correct, sir.
I have a feeling like I know the theme, Matt.
Do you now?
I feel it seems like you're going in a certain direction, but we'll wait. I'll hear the third question, and then I'll decide. Your hard question. Before founding Sadgasm, where did Homer work to pay off Marge's college tuition?
Oh, God. I feel like I know this. Laser tag. His dad's laser tag.
Wow, I'm impressed. I am impressed. It wasn't tapped out. That's why I was like, I saw that it wasn't tapped out. I'm like, Matt might get that just because it wasn't tapped out. Yes, in Grandpa's Laser Tag Warehouse, Simpsons Laser Tag. It has mostly been forgotten, much like the rest of that episode, as it probably should be. Give me a hard question.
All right, your hard question, which is not really that hard. Who does the voice of Chester J. Lampwick?
That'd be Kirk Douglas?
I don't know how you knew that, but yes.
What do you mean you don't know how I knew that? Kirk Douglas.
Like, how would you know that? I had no clue.
You can hear the voice. It was a big deal because Kirk Douglas is, like, even at that time, was super old, and, like, he is a famous Hollywood actor from the golden age of Hollywood.
Yeah, if you say so.
He was. Is still. Is he alive?
Yeah.
Kirk Douglas still alive? If he's alive, he's really old.
He's in his 80s now, I think.
He's 99 years old, and he's still alive. He is 99. I knew he was really old. He's the father of Michael Douglas, you know, who was also a famous actor. I was ahead. I got 2 points on you in that one, Matt.
That's true. I'm not sure it's going to help, though.
It is not going to help, but it is closing the gap. Okay. I'll make it look a little bit more respectable near the end here. We can move on to our next segment, Matt. Unfortunately, it is time for formal complaints.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Yeah, formal complaints is when you guys send in your, you know, if you have a formal complaint about something we got wrong or missed something, you can send it in and I will consider it. And this was sent in by many, many people and I understand the outrage. And even worse, we both got it wrong, Matt.
That's true. For some reason, I completely missed the sight gag.
Because I wasn't sure, and you're like, no, you're right. I'm like, okay. But no, the title of the Planet of the Apes musical is Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off.
Now we'll never forget.
No, I probably will never forget at this point. You know, failure does etch things into my soul. Also, someone noted that I was talking about Star Trek right after talking about Star Wars. I am completely aware that John Williams does not compose music for Star Trek.
That's true.
Matt made me record early in the morning where I was still sleepy and dazy, and I just went, oh, Star, whatever. Those are the same.
My Star things.
My dopey brain just could not comprehend that there were two different properties. But that's about it. We can move on to our final segment, the segment when every single episode with it is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show, Matt, and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Where are you looking, Matt?
I gotta be honest, I'm looking pretty high on this one. I really enjoyed this episode, and while, like you said, it doesn't have a whole lot of deep emotions, I think it spreads them out among enough characters that it still qualifies to be really high. It qualifies as a great Simpsons episode. So I'm looking, let me take a look at our list here. Top 20 easily, I think.
Oh, for sure. I was going to say at minimum, I would put it 14.
That's exactly where I was looking. I was trying to think
that Barbara's Australia that's is my complete similar. That's my lowest point, because Barbara's Australia is a wacky kind of adventurous romp, but it's better than Barbara's Australia. I just, how much further do you want to put it up there, if any further? What do you think?
Well, let's look what's above that. Bart of Darkness, a great Hitchcock homage. It's got some good movements. It's got some great music in there. I want to say that this is more enjoyable, mainly because, like I said, I'm going to push this probably higher than you are, because I really enjoy learning about all these characters and the variety. Because while I do enjoy episodes that are just the core family or one or two members of the core family primarily, I really enjoy ensemble casts for things like these. So I'm going to say it's better than Bart of Darkness. Sideshow Bob Roberts.
Here, let me. Give you a number, Matt, and see what you think about it.
Okay.
Number 8.
Are you reading my mind? Because I was looking, I was like, yeah, Sideshow Bob Roberts, Lisa, and I was last spring of Magnus 3. Bart's Comet. Ooh, that's going to be a tough one to get over.
I feel like it's just below Bart's Comet, right above And Maggie Makes 3. I would say Bart's Comet has a lot of the same things that this episode does. It has a lot of town in it, a lot of, side characters. I mean, you do see, you see Principal Skinner, you see all the kids and the super friends. You get the ending with the entire town crammed into Flanders bomb shelter. And it is also a lot about Springfield and the townspeople.
That's what I was just going to say. You get to learn a little bit about the geography of Springfield and just the people themselves. You get to learn a lot about them, and that's really great.
And it has, but I feel like because it has that heartfelt moment at the end, which I would put up there with my favorite things ever in the show.
Oh yeah,
definitely the Que Sera Sera sing along at the end, and then Homer being absolutely correct about the size of the comet. I think, and Maggie Makes 3 has also that tremendous emotional ending, but I feel like the entirety of this show is slightly better written and funnier. So I would put it number 8. Is that's acceptable?
That is definitely acceptable. I completely agree.
All right. Number 8, Lemon of Troy. Really good episode. I'm not sure if any quote unquote funny, I don't know if any quote unquote funny episodes are ever going to beat Marge versus the Monorail.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to have to be something really, really special in terms of funniness to ever get above that.
Cape Fear as well. It's not, but Cape Fear also has like that thriller. Marge with the Monorail is action, but Cape Fear has that like thriller horror element that just don't see in very many episodes. And they balance it so well with the humor. There's so many good Simpsons episodes.
It's true.
They're all so good.
It's a murderer's row the next two seasons. But then don't worry, we don't have to work as hard, because we'll be like, I'll throw it down at number 100.
I think that might even be harder. Like that yeah, might be harder true. To like to
because we just won't care anymore.
This one was good, but it's not that, I don't know. I think it's just by the nature of it, it's always going to be inherently pretty interesting. Yeah. What is our next episode, Matt?
Oh dear, I believe it's time for Who Shot Mr. Burns?
Part one. Except we have been asked by multiple people. We are breaking them apart. They are two separate episodes. We will rank them separately. It will be a little weird, but we'll work through it. To do an hour long episode as one of these, it would take a long time. And I feel like I'd prefer just to keep it a normal length and rank it. You watch them separately. They're separated by an entire summer. You have to.
That's true.
Judge them on their own.
You guys got to remember, you're only having a week in between these two. Anyone who watched it live was much more frustrated.
Well, we are going to discuss that, because I did watch it live. I remember how I felt, and we will talk about it. You'll find this list, the best episode ever list, at our website, simply thesimpsonsshow.com. Links to our new episodes, downloadable and streaming, all episodes archived there. Links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, links to our Patreon. If you think the show is worth a couple bucks, throw them our way. We really appreciate it. This list is broken down by season. Also, Treehouse of Horror segments are broken out individually and will soon be on season 7 and the next Treehouse of Horror episode. So we'll certainly get to that. I'm just banging things around over here. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. Also, please check out my comic book podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour, available on iTunes and wherever your finest podcasts can be found. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're certain to love a Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. However, currently at work, we are digging a giant 50-foot hole. So if I go missing, now you know where to look for me.
You can't, I need you, Matt. You can't just fall into a hole.
I'm not going to try, but I could probably podcast from down there.
I don't know about the acoustics in a hole.
It's a dirt hole, if that helps. It'll be good for sound dampening.
I don't know about all this. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the episodes.
Shh.